But cleaning for Pesach. Well known in rabbinic circles is the line that Pesach is not spring cleaning, even though it might come at the same time. In fact, that's probably the source of spring cleaning, the whole concept. Mr. Clean was Jewish. No. The whole...
But not particularly from...
Yeah. But the whole idea of spring cleaning really is not what Pesach is about. Pesach, we do a specific job where we search for chametz in places which are likely for chametz to be. If there's a place which is not likely for chametz to be,
have to
check that. If there's a place which is really super inaccessible, there's no way you could ever, right? Your wife doesn't usually pull away the refrigerator from the bathroom or behind the oven.
You'd be right? Surprised what kids can throw back there.
Yeah, okay. But that isn't something that's normally done. Okay, so don't decide. I have to check over there.
Just
in different things.
Case in point.
Yeah.
I, in many homes and commercial commissaries that I have kosher for Pesach, that's probably one of the first places to check.
Correct, okay. But if it's not accessible.
Under the refrigerator and under the stove.
If it's not so accessible, stuff then. It's a more easier thing to put aside on the list. Now, Rav Scheinberg, famous Rosh Hashiva, Posek, America and Israel, was somebody that took on in life a lot of chumras. Obviously, the most obvious chumra that he took on was the fact that he wore 100 pairs of tzitzis. Right? He was not somebody on Shabbos. He would have a tinus dibur. He wouldn't talk anything other than Torah-related topics. Not talking about somebody who is a mekel by nature. Yet, he would give shiurim to women before Pesach, where he was extremely mekel, lenient, in telling them what they have to do for Pesach. And this is all coming from the mindset that, look, Pesach, even if you're mekel and what you have to clean, it's still a very big job. Why put on yourself extra stress, extra challenges? Okay, this is what you have to clean. This is the degree of how far you have to go. You don't have to pull out that oven. You don't have to do this. You don't have to do that. So much so, this was a thing. I remember every year in yeshiva, Rabbi Neumann Zatzal, who was a close Talmud of Scheinberg, actually took over Scheinberg's position in yeshiva, would put up like a summarized list of Rav Scheinberg's cleaning, to do and not to do list when it came to cleaning. Post for all the talmidim in yeshiva to see, tell their wives, okay, this is Rav Scheinberg's psukim, how to clean for Pesach. And to me, that's first story, hanhaga, that I would pick of Pesach with Chesed is to understand and to know what you need to do for Pesach, need to clean, and what's extra, what you don't need to clean. And, you know, the way I view it is, even if, you know, when I give over the share, I'm giving over the shares to the masses, but not to one person, my wife. She has her own, okay, you can do what you want to do. I'm just telling you the basics of halacha you can choose to do. Right? Yeah. So. I mean, on her chesh, but not mine. But
if she has a question, she could just ask her father.
Yeah, maybe she would ask her grandfather. But okay. yes. So that's, I think, one fascinating topic of Pesach with Chesed. The next one, Pesach with Chesed, let's go to the... Yes.
Let's say you go couch. You're not going into that couch under the pillows and all that sort of stuff deep down. You know kids probably got chumras.
Yeah, so that might be a little different.
You have small grandchildren.
Right, yeah.
Huh?
And people occasionally...
Wait. My grandkids are a bit well-behaved.
They're what?
Well-behaved.
Harvey, I'm not allowed to tell the story, but I could tell the story.
You have a future
mall. One time I was in yeshiva by in a certain Rebbe's office. This Rebbe was one in charge of the dorm, and he was super makbid on outside things coming into the yeshiva, outside influences. One of the things the yeshiva didn't allow was a Sports Illustrated magazine. I'm sitting there in his office, and it was during a share. He had a couch there, so I was sitting on the couch. You know, some people, you know, I play with a pen sometimes, I do things. I happened to dig my hand into the couch, and I found something. Nova share with that Rav. I go and I pull out a little bit to see what it is. It's a Sports Illustrated magazine. I stuffed it right back in. That's chametz all year round by this Rebbe.
It was the worst one that they put out.
I'm not telling you any more details, but I stuffed it right back in.
Stop laughing.
So people do, a couch is a little trickier thing because people do, there are some rabbanim, they give heterim if you spray, what's it called on it? You know,
upholstery cleaner
or these disinfectants which make the food unedible. Now he'll say, my little grandkid is 2 years old, doesn't know the difference. I don't know what you're doing. Okay, it's a discussion. But yeah, so there's a list. People should know, not everything, to go as far. That's one area.
Can I make one more point on
yes.
cleaning before we talk? So when we bought our apartment, we bought it from a boy. So we had to replace the stove and the dishwasher. So when the guy came and pulled the stove out from this, you know, wall of cabinets and stuff, the chazerai that was stuck to the sides of that stove was unbelievable. And I want to just double up on what the rabbi said before about the stove and the fridge being a key place.
Yeah.
I mean, the stuff, the schmutz that was on the side, running down the side of the stove.
Right.
You couldn't see it when it's recessed in the cabin.
Right.
Pull it out, it was
something. The Gemara talks about cases of chametz and manafla of mapolis. You have chametz, but a whole mountain fell on top of it. So that's really what's going on behind your cabinets and the sides of your cabinets. You're not normally pulling it out. You're not showing your, when you have guests by your house, you show them, well, look at our nice kitchen. You don't show them, oh, look behind the stove. That's not part of the show and tell.
You're not over at volume on that.
If you don't pull out the stove, preparing for Pesach, then don't pull it out on Pesach.
Right. Definitely don't. Okay. Next area, we talk about Maos Chitin. Maos Chitin is a campaign that this time of year to give money to help people make Pesach. And obviously Pesach is, everyone knows,
very expensive,
right? There's a reason why they call matzah poor man's bread, right? It makes you poor each year even more. But there's a famous story. It happened with the Beis Halevi. Some said it happened with the Chaim. Could have been even both of them. Great Soloveitchik dynasty, where a poor person came to the Rav, the Beis Halevi in the Brisk, and asked him, look, would it be okay to use 4 cups of milk for the Seder? And a rabbi naturally, wow. Interesting halachic shilas. What's the idea of milk? Chamar medina, not chamar medina, because you use that. Does that work? Not work. And the engines start turning, and you start thinking about the halachic question that was posed to you. I'm sure the Beis Halevi did that, but he also realized the human side to that question. If a person is asking such a question, can one use 4 cups of milk for Pesach?
They don't have meat.
No. That means they don't have wine, they don't have meat, they don't have other things. And the Beis Halevi made sure that all their needs for Pesach was taken care of. And that's the type of thing also, okay, a times in our bottom to sometimes see, okay, what could be needed. All it takes is like a slight hint, which many people could miss. But to notice and realize, okay, yeah, like that's important. The issue is not an issue of using milk for the Seder. The issue is, okay, what can we do to help this family out more? That's clearly another idea of Pesach with Chesed, to find ways, you know, people are looking, you know, based off time, you know, I'll get to it in a moment. I'm going to talk about the whole concept of people baking their own matzahs, for example. You know, there are a lot of quote-unquote chumras that people could do on Pesach, which are very expensive, right? If you want to have matzah made from the Rebbe himself, you know, grinded the wheat, and, you know, has got Bali Mamish made every, watched it the entire time, and okay, that will cost a hefty dollar. So people spend money with different elements of the mitzvah of Pesach. But obviously, helping out another Jew, that they should be able to do the bare minimum, that's a milah. I remember by Hilchas Chanukah, there's a shayla, if a person could do the mitzvah himself with a greater hitter, a greater, better means of doing the mitzvah, versus somebody else doing it wouldn't have the means of doing it. The greater hitter mitzvah is to help another Jew, not for you necessarily to do it on a higher standard. And that's even by Chanukah, the Yom Tov of hitter mitzvah. So with my Pesach, whatever a person could do to help out others is always a big deal. Similar to that, we started talking about the matzahs. Just recently, someone came over to me, and I don't know why they started up with me. I guess they feel I'm the big mover and shaker here. They're like, why isn't there a matzah bakery here in South Florida?
There is.
Enough yeshiva people? Okay.
40.
Yeah, right. But this is
doesn't help us.
This is a yeshiva-ish person. How come we don't have, where are all the B'nai Yeshiva going and baking their matzahs? I get them imported. Oh, why don't you bake your own? There's an inyan, there's an idea for a person to bake their own matzahs. And like, you think South Florida has made it? Where's your matzah bakery? Right? In Williamsburg, they take the back of a school bus and, you know, make some oven there. Where's your matzah bakery? There is a big deal, especially if you're from the brisk camp, for a person to make their own matzahs, to go in, bake. You could see untold videos of older gedolim turning and churning, grinding the wheat for their matzahs. I saw a video of Chaim Kanievsky, who was way up there. Like, you know, you can't believe he's able to push somehow superhuman strength, this grinder. I saw something else that had like one that was like a tabletop one. They should have given that one to Rav Chaim. But so people are very into making their own matzahs. And when they're all matzahs, you can have your own chumras, all different chumras and how to bake matzahs. So you could use all your own chumras if you're baking your own matzahs. So somebody once asked, if you saw a Salanter, what kavana, what chumra should you have in mind when you're baking your matzahs? Hey, I have access to a matzah bakery. I make my own matzahs. Rebbe, what's the best thing I should focus on in baking my matzahs? And this is our third Hanhaga of Gedolim right here. So now Rebbe Yisrael Salanter said, you should have in mind not to scream at the almanas, the old ladies, who are baking the matzahs. A matzah bakery itself is a pretty intense 18 minutes. Or dunce, it's wasted. So the scene at a bakery could be chaotic. And the people who get the scorn and the, Mahir, hurry up, are the people working trying to make those matzahs. You ever go into a restaurant during the vacation weeks here? Think it in. Let's just say the East Coast, the turnover time from the time you place your order till the time it's flipped out to you. You know, in Lakewood, I placed the order. I got it, you know, like the whole dinner. I got it in like 30 seconds. Just plug it in. You finish payment, and it's basically waiting for you. In Florida, let's just say it takes a while here, right? It goes a little slower. But you sometimes find the vacationers from up north. Hey, what kind of service is this? Mm-hmm. Right? You did this in New York, it'd be shut down. Right, the threats and just the anger. Yikes. you can sometimes see people spewing at simple people just trying to do their job, and they have more people here and what you want from them. A matzabiki could look like that too. We saw Solanter say, you know, the most important thing you have only with your matzahs? Don't scream at the people who are involved in making your matzahs. You're weighing all different chumras, chaps and halacha, kavanas. Okay. How about you don't scream at the people making your matzahs? That's the best chum. That's the best chesed. That's three right over there. I have one more in the pre-Seder element. I remember this my times in Yeshiva. Now this is really a general thing, but it was particularly relevant for Pesach. Is Yeshiva Bachman go home for Pesach. Usually get off a decent amount of time before Pesach. Places in Eretz Yisrael, they're off for a month before Pesach. Come back. So you have a lot of Yeshiva Bachman around the town. My Rebbe, Reb Henoch, used to always talk to us to be careful and chazer over, review the halachas of Kibbut Alvein. You're going to be home for an extended amount of time. Best of one ability, people should be careful with the halachas of Kibbut Alvein. Now, something obviously switched over the generations, even from my generation to the generation today. You know what's quite common the moment Ben Azmanim hits? Is Yeshiva Bachram travel the world. Now it's time for vacation. It's been a long Zman. Oops. Actually, yeah. You have people that are literally traveling the world. Bachram, because they have a few days off, they only have off the rest of the year. So, okay, let's run around and travel the world. Now, okay. Not saying people don't need breaks. They do. People don't need outings. They do. But when you jump on a plane to Europe, you're not getting back so quickly. It's a few, you know, it's not just an afternoon out with the boys. That's a trip. People are doing these things. What's happening with the help around the house for Pesach? That used to be the norm. It was off Yeshiva. Okay, what can I do to help? Doesn't mean you have to help, you know, all day, every day, not necessarily that amount of, but something. Like, I think there's another madrega. Now, we've kind of talked about it, you know, generation to one degree. This is another degree. That whatever a person could do to help before Pesach, you know, that's a big deal. Yeah? You know, there's you have all these leafy vegetables. You have to look clean before Pesach. That takes time. Rabbi Sharfman, that's how, always had a smart idea. That he would pre-portion the size of Maror. Instead of sitting there at the Seder and measuring at the time of the Seder, they would make pre-packaged bags of whatever you do with Maror ahead of time. This is where you come to the Seder and here's the bag. This is already measured as a shear. I think he used to do it for matzah too. Okay? I'll sit, well, Erev Pesach afternoon, go through this. Yeah? Checking for bugs. Luckily, I check for bugs. I just found one. But
your coffee?
Huh? It drops in, I don't know. I'm good. But
water.
Water, yeah.
Hey.
It's the water.
Coffee.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, but the concept, that idea that there's for sure things people could do to help around the house, that's also a important pre-Pesach chesed. Okay, I'm going to watch my clock. I have a lot more to do. Once the Seder itself hits, so
relax.
There's two similar stories, but each in their own way. This first story is a classic, and I believe it's one of the greatest tradition of Rav Akiva Eiger. Rav Akiva Eiger is known for a sefer full of absolutely amazing questions and chidushim and answers. Kiveger had guests by a Pesach Suda, and getting up, doing Kiddush, everyone's sitting in a beautiful table and so many guests, so many people around. All of a sudden, one older man picks up his cup, about to do Kiddush, and he spills his cup all over the beautiful white tablecloth.
Formally white.
Without skipping a beat. Rabbi Akiva Eiger spilled his own cup. Momentarily. Now, you gotta be super sharp to make that decision. You spilled, I spilled. And Rabbi Akiva comments, oh.
It's been an earthquake.
No, you know, this table is all so rackety, you know, it's uneven. And excuses. Right? If he did it a few seconds later, it'll just be weird. Yeah, Rabbi Akiva Eiger did it. Simultaneously, that person spilled, I'm gonna spill. Why do you do that? Obviously, to save the person from embarrassment. And Pesach is a time, you invite guests, you have people at your table that may not always be there, and even within family. You know, I remember as a little kid, sometimes you are fearful, okay, little kids spill, that happens. You have to understand that. And you know, you hope they don't spill over you and your white kittle. But it could happen.
That's why you give them white wine.
Right. But, yeah. Talk about the chumras of having red wine at the Seder. But, Lemaisa, yeah, people spill. How are you to react to that? Rikiv Eger is the ultimate standard. I'm going to save them perfectly. I'll spill my wine too. But there's another story. Same, right? The fact that there's a second story is not a chiddush, because the story happens thousands of times, probably tens of thousands of times. The only stories that stand out are the good reactions. A similar story, Rav Huttner had a guest by his Seder who also spilled his wine over the table. Rav Huttner's line immediately back to the person, I think there is even worse. I think there he spilled it on Rav Huttner's white kittel. Can you imagine your Bali Rosh Hashiva's table? You're excited to be there. And one awkward move, you knocked over the cup, right? Which spilled the wine all over the Rosh Hashiva's kittel. To which Rav Huttner said, a kittel without wine stains is like a Yom Kippur machzor without tears. Mm-hmm. Comes with the territory. Yeah? What isn't more beautiful than Yom Kippur machzor that's wet from tears? Okay? A kittel that's wet from wine? Yeah. Jews doing mitzvahs. That's what we do. Amazing, amazing outlook. Another part of the Seder. This is really a two-part story. And it's funny because I've seen both parts of the story not necessarily brought together. Two separate things. Two separate books, but they're both true. Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky was a yeshiva bachur learning in Slovakia yeshiva. And in those days, yeshiva bachur were poor. They definitely didn't have money to go on a European trip. He didn't have money to go home for Pesach.
They were already in Europe.
Yeah, right. He was stuck in yeshiva for Pesach and nowhere to go. Okay? And it wasn't easy like back then. You know, during the whole school year, there wasn't a dorm. There wasn't yeshiva providing you food. You had to eat keg to eat by people's homes. So even if you eat by people's home during the year, that doesn't mean you would be eating by the Pesach. And Yaakov was stuck without being able to go home for Pesach, nor did he have a place to eat. He was getting nervous about it, what to do. Well, one day, his dreams, a man came over and offered him to eat by his house for Pesach. Except one problem. Rabbi Yaakov wasn't sure the standard of this person's kashrus. Felt that this person's kashrus was probably below what he would want to keep. Yaakov had no shaila that he didn't want to eat there because of the person's standards. But he had a bigger shaila. This person knows I have nowhere to eat. He's coming and offering me a place to stay, a place to eat. How could I turn him down? I'm not going to hurt his feelings. This is what Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky was nervous about. What should I do? Till he figured out the following chag. On Pesach, as we talked about, people have different minhagim. One of the major minhagim of Pesach is kibrox. Some people will not eat foods which are made of mixing together, you know, matzah meal and stuff. So Rabbi Yaakov understood this man was not machmir on kibrox. Honestly, Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky's family also wasn't machmir on kibrox. But he realized this would be a good out, a good excuse to tell the man, and he won't feel insulted about it. Yeah. So you know what Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky decided to do from that point on in his life? He took on the chumrah of kibrox so that he could excuse himself to not be a guest by this person's house.
And not be a liar.
Right.
Yeah.
Titin emes Liakov. Yaakov Kamenetsky Sefer was emes. Hold on. And that's what he did. Turn this person down. I read the story. It doesn't say the end of the story. Where did he eat for Pesach? I don't know. Well, he must have found a non-gebrux meal. He didn't starve. And, okay. But from that point on, Yaakov Kamenetsky kept gebrux. Up until one Pesach. One Pesach, first year after he gets remarried, after his first Rebbetzin passed away, sitting there on Pesach, okay, Zivik Sheni, they spoke before they got engaged, married. They never spoke about kibrox.
He was a Canadian
They're sitting there by a Yontif Suda on Pesach, and Rabbi Yaakov's second Rebbetzin goes and brings to the table something which is kibrox. What does he do? As the Rebbetzin goes back into the kitchen to bring out the next portion, Rabbi Yaakov quickly turns to the three men sitting next to him at the table, says, I want to be Matir Nether. I want to undo a vow that I've been doing. Till now I've kept kibrox. I was only this. I didn't know that my new wife Machpin, would you be Matir my Nether? They all said yes, and he enjoyed whatever canadles or stuff.
How'd that play out if he went to his home, his father's house?
And
his his father obviously didn't hold the box.
Right.
So what would he have done?
That's a very interesting question. Yeah. In general, the question was posed, you know, what happens to a person who starts keeping some minhagim different than one's parents? Yeah, so that's tricky. It's a tricky thing. As a Rebbe, if a Talmud asked me that question, I said, look, you know, aside from eating a sukkah on Shmini Atzeres, but, you know, okay, they want to be machmir on kibrox, or your parents are not machmir on kibrox. Like, you know, if that's the starting point, you grew up without being machmir on that. Yeah. It's the chumrah, and most people hold there's not much to the chumrah. In fact, some people even say don't be matir nether. There's nothing to it. Okay, Yaakov held there's something to it, at least to the degree he had to be matir nether. But in general,
They had to have spoken about that once the maisa happened in some way.
Should I tell you the maisa? No. Harvey knows about this one because he put the question in my head. The first Shabbos I had my new chassan to be. Why? They dated and this and that. They thought we knew everything. And we, Harry said, why are you talking about minhagim? It's exactly one of the topics we did. And it came out in the middle of the Suda that this chassan is not going to the Brux, which my family is not. My wife, my daughter did a. Right.
Enjoy this pizza.
I don't know what their problem was. I would say, so don't feed him kibrox, okay? Keep on serving on kibrox. Like, what's the problem? My wife didn't agree with me on that one either. Huh?
Well,
the less fire I have to make.
Yeah, like, oh, gosh. Anyway.
I did hear from someone, somebody else who was by the Rosh Hashiva for a Seder, confirmed that it is true. The Rosh Hashiva would invite guys for the Seder, but he would tell them, if your family's makbid not to eat gebrutz, ask your father to give you rishus to eat gebrutz, because he didn't want to inconvenience the rabbis.
Okay, very interesting.
Beautiful. So it sounds, he didn't say anything about makir neder. He just said, ask your father for rishus.
To tell the story of how Sir Rosh Hashiva would tell Talmidim that they were not makbid in gebrutz, and he would tell them not to inconvenience his rabbis and talk to your parents if they would allow for this. Okay? Just want to hit a couple more stories before we finish up. Hold on. I just, the last story that I've collected before the share, actually this morning, I asked somebody whose grandfather is on Gadol, do you remember any interesting stories from being by your grandfather's Seder? So over the top of his head, he couldn't think of one. But he came back to me with a story that he heard from about a certain Amgadol, who I'm going to leave out the name due to the nature of the story. But this Amgadol would get his matzahs each year from a certain matzah bakery. One year came out that this matzah bakery, some of the employees they use, may not be Shomer Torah mitzvahs. Now, halakhically, you have Omen El Gabav, you have people there. There's what to say for the matzahs to be kosher, 100% to be used at the Seder. But it definitely is nacha madrega chumra, that it's best to have matzahs which are made by people who are Shomer Torah mitzvahs. And there was this controversy about this matzah bakery that they didn't do. So this particular Amgadol paskin, the people asked them, if you bought those matzahs, 100% you should use those matzahs. Now, personally, he himself wanted to be machmer. Now, I'll tell you a story as a sidebar before I get back to what this Amgadol did on Pesach. But there's a story one year in Chaim Berlin Yeshiva, the Baal Tekeh was blowing shofar, and let's say the kolos weren't simple. The yeshiva let them through, but so after davening, a lot of bachrim started making trouble that kolos weren't good. We should do the kolos again. We should blow shofar again. So Baron Schechter, who was known as, could be tough, absolutely screamed at Talmidim, no, yeshiva pasim is good. That means it's good. And you're making a taram, way embarrassing the person. No, it's fine. And push back against the Talmidim. Okay? Somebody happened to be walking by the Rosh Hashiva's office in the middle of the afternoon. And guess what sounds they heard coming out from the office?
Yeah.
Da-da-da-da-da.
True.
Shot is, the Rosh Hashiva felt, for the pasking for everybody, of course, this is good enough. And we shouldn't make a whole taram do over the whole thing. But is there some element of chumra? Yeah, there is some element of chumra. But I don't think that's for the simple Talmidim in the yeshiva, the 18-year-olds in the yeshiva. He himself. Yeah, perhaps. But so he himself heard it later. So this Olam Gadol, this hak about the matzah bakery, bothered him to the extent that he got different matzahs that year. But when he came to his Suda, which he knew people would be watching him, the other matzahs he got, he put in the matzah, switched the boxes, and put in his own personal matzahs in the box of the matzah bakery which he normally got from, which he told everyone else he could still get from there. He was eating different matzahs, but it was with the box and giving fully the hechsher, and not to downgrade that matzah bakery which this whole thing was on. Amazing, amazing sensitivity for the feelings of others. I want to tell one more story, one more hanhaga, and maybe finish off with an interesting story, some might know. So far, we touched upon different hanhagas to do before the Seder, whether it's matzah baking, mal schitim, cleaning for Pesach, kibud av aim, during the Seder, what happens at the Seder, wine, matzah, gebracht, but also post Pesach. Post Pesach, there are different things people could do in terms of chumras of where to buy your food. So there are some people that, you know, stores obviously could only buy from a store that sold their chametz. Some people are machmir not to buy, only to buy from a store that everything is fresh. And they didn't sell their dough, they didn't sell their stuff. But obviously for some bakeries, it's a hard thing, you know, not to sell your stuff. You want to be able to, you have a big orders, you have to do things after Pesach, so they sell it. Some people are machmir against that. If David Feinstein would make a point after Pesach to go to his regular bakery in the Lower East Side, right, got his files every week, dafka to go and buy there. Even though there, they sold their dough and, you know, they didn't start totally, totally fresh after Pesach. And David Feinstein made a point of going there and telling people that he's going there because this person needs parnasa. So there's a chumrah to buy, yeah, okay, but they rely on the community to buy from them. How can I buy from them?
Went to the shop himself too.
Yeah.
Well, everyone knows after Pesach is right, the best time to go.
We don't go to the cream for 6 months.
Don't go where?
Yeah.
Krispy Kreme.
But.
Don't play
Shantos. I'll tell one last story which has become famous because of a song that they made about it. But there's a story after the Holocaust of Yidden, who were survivors, baking matzahs. And there was one Rebbe that was able to get an oven and set up a matzah bakery. Everyone went to him. But this is right after the war, and their resources were very limited, and they were only able to give one matzah per person. One matzah per person. Well, okay, everyone came to this matzah bakery. They got their one matzah per person. And then the gabbai of another Hasidic court came by. I'm here for the Rebbe. I'm here to get multiple matzahs. The person in charge, like, okay, I stand in the gabbai of your Rebbe, but they made a rule, only this amount. So I'm the gabbai of the Rebbe, and I need to get more than one. Pushed him and pushed him and pushed him and gave him. But at first, it left him with a bad taste in his mouth. Like, you know, after, you know, everyone's going with rationing down for what they have, and you think your Rebbe is more important and he deserves more. What is this?
My Rebbe is bigger than your Rebbe.
So listen to the end of the story. An amazing story. The Rebbe whose Gabbai wanted more was the vision of the Rebbe. The Erev Pesach, there's a knock on the door of the Rebbe who started the whole matzah bakery. It was this vision of the Rebbe. And he said to him, I know you've been osik the whole time, this matzah bakery, I want to give you some matzahs. He realized that the person, the Rebbe who started the matzah bakery, bacon, matzahs for everyone there.
For himself.
I wouldn't take for himself. So this other Rebbe realized that, and he took, despite the fact he knew he might look bad in doing it, but he took extra matzahs. So he knew you deserve two. You're not going to take for yourself, but I'm going to get for you. And I think that's the spirit of what Pesach is really all about. You do all your preparations. Get the last matzahs. We have to. We have to look out for the next person too. This is Hashem. We keep a Pesach like this. A Pesach with Chesed should bring us really to a season of Geula. Amen.
Amen.
Amen. Thank you everyone for coming. As Hashem, next week we hope to have the last shiur before Pesach.
There's the last...